We're hearing some of the sounds that shocked and shook a Paris audience to the point of a riot. It was the premiere of Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. That performance took place on May 29, 1913, and now orchestras all over the world are celebrating the centennial of Igor Stravinsky's most famous work. Stravinsky, however, did compose prolifically for another 50 years. And here to talk about his later career is Morning Edition music commentator Miles Hoffman. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning, Renee.
Now, Miles, Stravinsky was young. He was just 30 years old when he wrote The Rite of Spring, and he lived to be very old, almost 90 years old. That's plenty of time to write a lot more music.
Yes, it is. And he did. He really did. He wrote any number of great pieces. He also was very busy making an extra living as a pianist and a conductor. He played all over the world in every city, all over Europe, all over the United States.
But it's The Rite of Spring that is the object of this whole centennial celebration, because it was what? Both revolutionary and controversial?
Well, that's a big part of it, Renee. Nobody had ever heard anything like it. And to this day, it remains flabbergasting when you hear The Rite of Spring. It's a flabbergasting, overwhelming masterpiece. The thing is, Renee, that in some ways, The Rite of Spring can also be seen as much as a culmination as a revolution.
Now, how do you mean?
Well, Renee, it was the culmination of what one music scholar has called musical maximalism. Throughout the 19th century, the orchestra's been getting bigger and bigger. The power intensity of unlimited musical expression with orchestral forces had been growing. Everything had been getting bigger. And with The Rite of Spring, this maximalism reached a kind of peak. The situation reminds me of what Claude Debussy, the composer Debussy, wrote about the music of Wagner. He said that Wagner's music was a beautiful sunset that people mistook for a dawn. And I think you might say that The Rite of Spring was a spectacular sunset that people mistook for a dawn. And various composers still tried to imitate certain aspects or elements of the rite, but most of the imitators were unable to synthesize these elements with anything approaching Stravinsky's genius.
Well, what about Stravinsky himself? One might think that he would, at that moment in time, 100 years ago, think, how to top this after
Rite
of Spring?
He didn't really try to top it. If Stravinsky started out as a revolutionary, it wasn't too long before he became a kind of counter-revolutionary. If you keep the sounds of the 1913 Rite of Spring in your mind, Renee, then listen to this music that Stravinsky wrote in 1920.
That is shocking.
Pretty surprising. Well, that's the opening of the suite from the ballet Pulcinella. And Stravinsky borrowed the tune from an 18th century trio sonata. And this piece ushered in a whole new style or a trend in 20th century music that was called neoclassicism. The big forces were stripped down, old musical forms were resurrected, and the emphasis shifted to a kind of musical cleanliness. There was clarity, sparkle, pungency, humor, even irony in the music.
Irony? Tell us more about that.
Well, ironic in the sense that you had a composer who could shake the heavens, but what he chose to do with these immense powers was to take small groups of musicians and bring these modest old musical forms to life with new language, with 20th century language. That's from Stravinsky's Dumbarton Oaks Concerto, Renee. And that piece is a kind of Baroque concerto grosso, but it was written for a chamber orchestra in 1938.
Well, I wonder, when you talk about neoclassical style, Miles, at what level or in what ways did Stravinsky's revolutionary tendencies ever reassert themselves?
Well, the thing about Stravinsky is that he was always remarkably adventurous, Renee. He went wherever his artistic ideas took him and wherever he thought he could do something good and interesting. Later in his life, in fact, he even wrote pieces in the so-called 12-tone style. This was the style that had been pioneered by Arnold Schoenberg.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a little bit of a piece called The Double Canon for String Quartet, and that's a piece that Stravinsky wrote in 1959, or 46 years after The Rite of Spring.
Miles, given these various changes in style through Stravinsky's long life, is there anything that you would call Stravinskian, a way we can instantly tell that a piece is by Stravinsky?
Renee, years ago I went to an exhibit of post-impressionist art at the Art Institute of Chicago. The exhibit spread through a number of galleries, and the styles changed from gallery to gallery. But in each one, the first painting that grabbed my eye and made me turn my head was by Picasso. And I think there's a parallel with Stravinsky. His style never stayed exactly the same, but there's always something in his music that grabs you, something hard to explain that's inescapable. And in fact, I think that's why we still care about Stravinsky, Renee. The revolutions, the counter-revolutions, all the categories, the trends that he set, they're all important. But ultimately, they're only important because they were the work of a unique genius.
So again, Igor Stravinsky, and talking about grabbing you, his Rite of Spring will be 100 years old this Wednesday. And Miles, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Renee.
Miles Hoffman is the violist of the American Chamber Players, and he's also the author of the NPR Classical Music Companion.
And from NPR News, this is Morning Edition, directed by Lindsay Toddy and Travis Larchuk.
The production staff includes Oliver Dearden, Nick Fountain, Jess Gittner, Kevin Leahy, Lauren McGaughey, Steve Monroe, Maggie Penman, Vince Pearson, Leah Scarpelli, Selena Simmons-Duffin, and Rachel Ward.
With Caitlin Parker at NPR West, our acting executive producer is Tracy Wall. NPR's executive editor is Madalika Sika. The executive editor of news programming is Ellen McDonald.
Morning Edition's theme music was written by B.J. Lederman and arranged by Jim Pugh. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm David Green.